Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, I did. I just
Okay.
talked before I made the call.
You guys there?
Hey,
We're
who
here.
is this?
Okay. Sorry
It's a
about that.
party
You,
line.
I've had this down, the call thing, but all of a sudden this time my software wasn't working, but I think we're up and going now.
All right. All right. So you tell us when you want us to start taping, and then we get serious. How's that?
Well, hello, I'm Jeff Gaudiosi, and you're on misplacedstraws.com, where music comes to life. And in this edition of our new music spotlight, I'm featuring the debut EP from a pair of industry veterans. The record is called Diana Doors, and the band is Rogers and Butler. And I'm pleased to welcome Edward Rogers and Stephen Butler. Welcome, guys.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Doing great.
Thanks for having us on, Jeff.
Anytime. It's a pleasure to have you. Now, first off, you guys have both been at this separately for quite a while. Edward with your solo career and Stephen with Smash Palace. How did you two come together for this project?
Steve, you want to take that one?
Yeah, I believe it was over 10 years ago, and Zip Records, the label that Edward and I are both on, there was a showcase at the Cutting Room in New York City. So I had received a copy of Edward's latest record, and I really liked it. So when we were at the club, I walked over to him, and I said, hey, I just wanted to let you know I really love your recent record, and you remind me of somebody that I'm sure you've never heard of, because I've never met anyone who knows who this person is. And I said, the guy's name is Duncan Brown. And then Ed says, oh, yeah, I know of Duncan Brown. And, I know him well. And, we got into this long conversation. And I'm like, I finally met somebody who likes one of my favorite artists of all time. So we immediately had this rapport musically.
And you should check out Duncan Brown if you haven't, Jeff. He's he was on Immediate Records in around 1967. Amazing guitarist, which Steve embellishes, I think, and I do too. And he's one of those lost artists, but we just both connected on that level of, of kind of like, wow, this guy is just one of those forgotten heroes, and there's a lot of them in the music world, is what you
Oh,
know.
Definitely. I'll certainly check him out. And,
I think the album was Give Me, Take You, I think is the
when you did come together and bond, I mean, did you guys know you wanted to work together, or was it just a, wow, actually found somebody who's into the same thing I am?
We just started, it's funny because we just started talking and running into each other, and eventually, I don't know which one of us it was, but I think I might have sent you some lyrics, Steve, and you put this amazing – I think I was working on an album, and I had a set of lyrics that I just thought would resonate with Steve, and I sent them to him, and he came back with the music that just was perfect for the song. And I was just like, wow, this is great, because I don't know if you know this, but I live in New York City, and Steve just lives right outside of – Where are you exactly, Steve?
Haddon Heights, New Jersey, which is 5 minutes from Philadelphia.
I say Philadelphia, but yeah,
I'm in New Jersey, and I'm proud of it.
Well, we talk about that a lot. I keep saying, where are you living again? But that's how, and so that really started us writing, and without us really being in the same room. But what's the great thing about, today's technology is, I can sit down and write a set of lyrics and maybe, put some musical instruments to him and send it to Steve, or vice versa, and Steve can send me, music, and I can put lyrics to it. And it's just, we're on the same path 95% of the time, and when we're not, that's even better, because then one of us is going to be right, and it ends up you know, normally Steve.
So it seems like it kind of formed pretty naturally. You know, did you have an idea that, yeah, we're going to, you know, put these songs out, you know, in a project, or was it just writing just to write?
I think we were just writing to write, but
yeah, I think we were writing. Yeah, initially it was writing to write, and then I think when we were working on songs for your last record, we had songs. We had extra songs, and we were going, "Wow, these are really great songs." Huh. And I think I'm gonna step in and take credit here, because I think I might have been the one that suggested us doing an EP.
You did
with the additional songs.
You did,
and and then after we did that. And it was such a great experience. I think, I don't know, it's been since maybe November. We've written 10 new songs.
Yep.
So it's, you know.
Oh,
You know, it's kind of like, yeah. So, yeah, we're ready to go. We're ready to record our next record, and this one's just coming out. So we're,
You know, I think I kick you up the butt a lot because I keep sending you lyrics and you keep reading them and go, oh, more crap. And then you say, oh, this is good. I'll take that one, you know. But we're good for each other, you know, like this is me, and it gives me another way of constantly thinking and writing words or coming up with little ideas. And we'll sit there and kind of go, well, we need this type of song. Well, let's see what comes naturally. And then it kind of just floats to the top eventually. It's like, there it is.
Hmm. Now, let's kind of talk about the EP itself. And I guess my first question. Yeah, I do, definitely. It's the first question is, why Diana Doors? And I have to say, I'm one of those people where when I hear a song or a new project, I get into it, I do the research. So, you know, I went back and looked her up and read all the information on her, fascinated. But why her for the title track to your record?
Why not her is the first answer to you. Mm-hmm. And second, she's one of those neglected heroes from my side of it, I love finding these forgotten heroes, you know. I started researching her, and I just thought, she's great for a song. And when I mentioned it to Steve was like, yeah, let's do this. And I think, you know, we were both on the same wavelength. But, Steve, you had your side to it, too. You knew her as well as I did, actually.
Yeah. I'm a real movie buff, and especially film stars, 30s, 40s, 50s. That's just kind of, I prefer that to oftentimes more modern movies or whatever. So when Ed brought up Diana Doors as a subject and a lyric, I was like, yeah, that sounds awesome. That's a great idea. And I think we knew right away when we had the song that it was something special. Not that we go, oh, this song isn't special or whatever, but sometimes you just get something that really kind of stands out. And so when we were looking for a title for the album, I think we went with that because of the way it kind of impacted us. You know, when you go to radio stations and things and you have a radio promotion person, you know, they'll say, well, you know, Diana Doors is a ballad and that really doesn't do well on the radio, so we should go with this song. But maybe I'm speaking for both of us here. It might have been our favorite song.
I think your performance on that one, Steve, is great. I mean, Steve sung that song, and I was just like, that to me is, I don't know what radio or United States radio was all about, but I just knew that was my favorite song on the EP. And we just also we had the imagery of like what an amazing looking lady that people, you know, don't know her story. It's engaging once you know.
Right.
Yeah, and the image will capture the attention and make people come back and listen to the song and find out more. So it works.
She was a smart lady and just got into the Hollywood ways. And two little trivia things about Diana Doors. One is Diana Doors was in an Adam and the Ants video. I think it's Stand and Deliver. And, you know, so people want to check that out. That's where she was in her latter years. But she also, her, one of her best friends was a guy, an English rock and roll guy, well, American rock and roll guy called P.J. Proby, who has in his, apparently in his will or his last, you know, rights, is he wants to be married in the grave with Diana Doris.
Oh, God. I didn't know that one, Ed.
You know,
something new every day. Now, the EP is four songs, and each song to me just had a totally different feel to it. It almost plays like a sampler of all of the types of music you guys can do. You know, was that diversity intentional, or was it just because those were the songs that were left from the last project?
Steve, you want that one?
I think we have, I think Ed and I both have pretty eclectic tastes. So, he could send me some lyrics and say, wow, I wish we could get if I could get a Small Faces, you know, vibe on this song or, you know, whatever. So, you know, when sometimes Ed will give me a little bit of a guide of what he would like to do. And at other times it's just a ton of lyrics, and I'm just like going through and go, okay, I'll use this line, and it's, you know, it's kind of sometimes my job is like being an editor.
Oh yeah,
Ed is such an amazing writer, and lyrics just pour out of him, and it's you know, I can finish a song, and the next week I got a whole other set of lyrics to work. which is great, because for me, I just have melodies popping out of my head all the time. Like when I listen to music, I tend to listen to instrumental music more than anything. I'm like a classical music nut. So I'm always, you know, kind of visualizing what he's doing and going, oh, okay, what's a good musical setting for this? And the other thing that's really peculiar about Ed and I, we just wrote 10 songs. And Ed said, I'm thinking I would sing these five, and you would sing these five. And I'm looking at my list, because I made it up too. I made up my own list. They were identical. Which is,
that's when you know it's working. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you get a feel.
This record.
Yeah, you get a feel. It's like a vibe about it. It's like, you know, on these songs, like you were saying, Jeff, that each one has got a different personality or a different style. And it's true, but it wasn't intentional, but it was just kind of like each one of them, what made it intriguing, to both of us, is that each one of these songs was in a different style. For example, you know, if you look at Possibilities, a lot of people are seem to be liking that track, and that has just some sort of magic in there that just catches people's attention. Whereas Witness Tree, to be totally frank, I wrote the lyrics to that. I woke up and it took 2 minutes. I literally had this whole concept in my mind, wrote the lyrics in 2 minutes, and then sent them over to Steve. And the next morning I had Steve sent me music, and it was like, wow, you totally took what I got and understood what was the flow that would make the whole combination of the music and the lyrics work, you know?
Well, it's
funny. But we did have 7 Hour Man, which was like definitely psychedelic. I mean, I definitely knew that's what I want. I would have psyched it out more, but, you know, Don Piper, who's our producer, God bless him, he puts up with us, you know, was like, you can't do that, or, you know, it's beyond.
Yeah, and I think that was the reverse thing, where I sent you the music first.
Yes, that's right.
And you came up with the lyric, 7 Hour Man. Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's funny, because I think more and more people these days are falling into that routine. So it's a really relevant story for today and maybe for tomorrow, but more and more people seem to be falling off the wave, you know, off that wave of, like, you know, you could have a job 9 to 5 and just leave it all behind. And those days are long gone, you know.
Well, that song in particular, 7 Hour Man, you have the lyric is very of the moment, but like I said, the music is complete British Invasion, you know, psychedelia of the late 60s. So it's a cool dichotomy with that song.
You got it.
Yeah,
and so you brought up Witness Tree. You know, I'm a lyric guy. I'm always drawn to that. And the second I heard that line of, you know, let the vultures have his body and the devil can take his ghost, that grabbed me. You know, where did that come from? Is there a story behind Witness Tree, or is that just something you kind of made up on your own?
You know what? In the middle of the night when I woke up, my vibe was, I have all these lyrics, and I was thinking of John Westing Harding, Bob mm-hmm. Dylan. And I am not a big Bob Dylan fan, to be totally frank with you. But I went in, and that was just in my subconscious, and I just, all those lyrics just poured out literally within 2 minutes. I mean, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was like, if I don't get up and write these things down, they're gone. You know, they will not be in my brain tomorrow morning. So I just put them all down and then sent them to Steve. And then Steve obviously picked up on the vibe. It was kind of like, and that's the special thing. That's really exciting. I can't tell you, Jeff, maybe you have some background in this too, but it's so exciting when you can put something together and send it to somebody, a fellow person who's on the same wavelength as you, and you can have a completed song. It's a great feeling. And that one especially, because, like I said, I'm not particularly a Bob Dylan fan, but it was like, it's time for me to do something that's kind of in that vein. And Steve must have been like, had the antennas up again.
Yeah.
Well, I think the song definitely has the feel of, you know, the 70s era Dylan, which, you know, it was a really cool stretch of time. It's funny to hear you say that you're not particularly a Dylan fan, because, you know, I think
I love his songs. I think
an influence of his really comes out in that song.
Yeah.
And,
you know, it's sorry, mate.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I love his a lot of his songs. I think people who interpret his material just do an amazing job, and he's obviously worthy of all the praise he gets. But if for my listening taste, it's just not something that I gravitate towards. I'm very melody-oriented. I'm very vocals-oriented. And if you've got phrasing and you've got those are all important elements to me when I'm just listening to music for my pleasure. But I'll go, you know, the thing about me, which can drive Steve, I would assume, crazy, is I can today be listening to the Beatles, and then tomorrow be listening to some prog record, you know, and the next day I'm listening to Tame Impala. And so my musical taste changes every couple of hours. You know?
Well, that's me as well. I totally get you on that. Yeah, and it's funny, though, when you do mention that about Dylan, you know, I think if you listen to a lot of the, you know, kind of re-recordings like Brian Ferry's album of Dylan covers and Willie Nile's album of Dylan covers, I think it breathes a whole new life into those songs. Like I said, the melody and the phrasing is really what stands out in those.
Right.
Yeah, and I think the thing with Dylan is that you can't underestimate is his impact on rock music. I mean, you know, you had the Beatles singing She Loves You, Yeah, 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 I Want to Hold Your Hand, I Saw Her Standing There. And then Dylan comes along, and the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and the Kinks and everybody are listening to Dylan. And then the Beatles, within a year, are writing songs like Hide Your Love Away, I'm a Loser. I mean, the lyrics of the Beatles completely changed, and even with the Rolling Stones. So even though people don't often think of Dylan as being like a rock star, lyrically, I think he had more of an impact than anybody I can think of in modern rock and roll.
I agree with you partially. But, you know, it's interesting because when I think of someone like Ray Davies, I think that Ray would have went down that path no matter what.
Without
Dylan. You know?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so I totally agree with you. You know, as far as Lennon and McCartney, as soon as they met him, they knew where they were going to go. The harmonicas came out. The acoustic guitars came out on Rubber Soul. The flow of the material went that way. Look at Ray Davies, and Ray was writing really from an English standpoint, which I don't really think was that heavily influenced by Dylan for some reason.
You're right in the sense that if you look at Well Respected Man from 1964, or early 65, I mean, that's, you know, he's doing social commentary. right there at the same time with Dylan. They're almost like happening, you know.
I think he was more influenced by Noel Coward.
yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure, which is funny because we have a new song called Noel Coward. And, you know, have you ever heard of Noel Coward? And I'm like, absolutely. I know lots of Noel.
Yeah, that album cover won't be as good as the Diana Doors one. So.
Well,
yeah.
We'll try.
it's good. I mean, if you like Noel Coward, you love this song because it's a song about him done in a Noel Coward way. So,
well, and again, you talk about Ray Davies and the Kinks. I think the Kinks, at least here in America, were just so underrated and get kind of put behind a lot of those other bands. When really, like you said, I mean, I think they were their own thing as opposed to really being influenced by a lot of the music going on around them.
Well, you know, Ray Davies, I personally have been around Ray Davies, and I think above all other things, the thing about the Kinks, which is a great marketing tool, is that Ray loves to play the underdog.
Mm-hmm.
He loves to play the underdog, and I think that's the longevity of his career, is we're all saying, oh, poor, the Kinks never really got their justification.
Yeah, that's right.
The Kinks did fine.
Ray is a wealthy man, that's for sure.
He's a well-respected man, yes.
Yes, he is.
And a dandy.
And now, you guys played a handful of shows in the fall, actually with Marty Wilson Piper, who I love. I wish I was able to catch one of those shows. But now that the record's out, would you guys be doing any live shows in the area or around the country at all?
Good question. We're doing a first show here in March 27th at Pangea, which is in New York City. So we're going to be doing that. And that's kind of to break the set in, but also that it's a really nice little club, and we just want to kind of, you know, come and do that show. But then we're off to England. And we're doing 4 or 5 dates in England. We've got a little mini tour. And we kind of put this thing together with songwriters that we admire. There's a gentleman by the name, and I don't know if you know any of these people, but if you don't, and there's any listeners out there who love English lyrics and sarcasm, these are really three really great songwriters. John Howard, who was originally signed around the same time as Elton John and David Bowie,
mm-hmm.
and has about 30 albums out, and now all of a sudden is getting an acclaim. He has a book. And we got him to come over from Spain to do one date with us. And then the rest of the tour is with a gentleman by the name of Vinnie Peculiar, who is from Manchester and has been in every band from Oasis to New Order to, you know, never found success, but has these great songs that capture the Ray Davies world, you know. And a mate of mine who's also a singer-songwriter who's very sarcastic, Simon Love. So we get to play with these guys, but we're also going to get to see, you know, really, I think, really some talented guys that are neglected as far as the world is concerned. So we're part of that little team of musicians.
Well, that's great to hear. I mean, you know, personally, I love going to shows like that where you can kind of experience, you know, a band you're there to see, but find 3 or 4 others that you may not have heard of before that you end up loving just as much. So that's always a good thing.
Yeah, I think Steve, you heard all the talent there. What do you think?
They're really great. I mean, and they're very English, but that's great for me because I'm a total Anglophile. And that is one that I think we're doing a May date, May 17th at the Living Room in Ardmore, PA, which is in the suburbs of Philadelphia. So we will be coming to
Jeff, where are you?
I'm based in Connecticut.
See, we got to get a Connecticut show so we can get up there to see you.
Definitely. You know, and a lot of times, too, we go into New York for a lot of shows, too. So if I could ever catch one in the city, we're there.
Okay. Well, we've got some other dates that we're lining up. So, you know, that's just the start of what we're going to do. It's all kind of happening rather quickly. So it's kind of like, okay, jump on the bandwagon, you know?
And you had also mentioned, too, that you have a lot more songs recorded. Any idea when there'll be more music coming out? Are you looking to do something that's full length or another EP or what's next?
I think we're going for a full length and, you know, based on, I would hope we could get it done and out next year. At least, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the real good thing about this is we had a great rhythm section. Dennis Dykin, who is in the Smithereens and well, really great drummer, well-respected, and one of our best mates, Sal Mader, who was in Sparks and Roxy Music, were our rhythm section. And Steve is a really versatile guitarist and keyboard player by himself. And Don Piper, who's played with Sid Straw and is in Don Piper's Situation, is just a producer, but he's also an auxiliary musician and just one of our best mates. And between that little network, we were able to cut this EP with a lot of time left over in 2 days. So I think if we had a week, we could knock, or even 5 days, we could knock off a full-length
record, yeah.
And then go back and do. And the great thing about both Steve's setup and mine is Steve has his own Pro Tools, and I have Logic, and we can bounce tracks back and forth. And you know, that's refreshing because you can sit with things for a couple of days and kind of go, well, that works, but maybe I can do it better. And you have to, you know, but you can kind of do a lot these days pretty quickly. And we recorded that EP really fast. Would you say
We did. And most of the stuff that we recorded were keepers. It wasn't, you know, sometimes you go in and you record and then you come back out and you just keep the drum track and you rebuild everything from ground up. But this was a lot of the playing, most of the playing was just from our sessions because we would kind of go through the songs. We had 2 days really for everybody to learn them and record them. So it was a pretty quick. It was one of the fastest records I've ever made, that's for sure. So,
but there's also the sensitivity of the people involved. They all understood the sensitivity. Like, you know, we picked.
There wasn't a lot of explaining going on.
No, they instinctively knew just what we're getting at each song. So if you turned around and said, well, this has got a certain vibe to it, and, you know, they listen to it once or twice and go in, and within two or three takes, we'd have it nailed down. And that's great.
I think it's fantastic. Anyone out there, check out Diana Doors. All four songs are really top-notch. I mean, when it's done, you're can't wait for the next one to come out. So, you know, really looking forward to that. I just want to thank you guys so much for your time. This has been a lot of fun. I hope we can catch you on the road. Keep in touch whenever you guys have any dates or anything coming out. Let me know. We'll get the word out there and make sure everyone sees you guys and listens. And again, just thank you. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Jeff, for, you know, being, you know, an early believer. We appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Yes. Good to talk with you.
Definitely. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great day.
Cheerio.
Yep. Cool. Bye.